Parshas Vayera, so you can flip to page 100. What I'd like to discuss, we'll talk a little bit about this fine afternoon, is the incident known as Akedas Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac, the end of the parsha. We're going all the way to the back end. This, of course, is one of the major tests given to Avraham from Hashem. The sages say in Pirkei Avot that Avraham was tested 10 times. The commentators disagree exactly what the 10 tests were, but both Rashi and the Ramban, Nachmanides and Rashi, are both in agreement that this was the 10th of the 10 tests, which gives it a sense of being one of the most difficult tests that he was given. And certainly all of us can intuit that as quite a task, that which the story which we are certainly familiar with. So what I'd like to do is we're going to learn through a little bit, just maybe the first few verses of this incident inside. We'll take apart some comments made by Rashi and the Ramban and others, and then we'll talk a little bit about it as we go along. Alright. This section opens up, as you have here on page 100 and 101, with the first verse, Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'eila. So the phrase, the story, this incident of this test, in which Hashem commands Avraham to sacrifice his son to him, begins with the phrase, and it was, it happened after these things. Now, as we learned last week, we started, for those who remember, last week's class, the section that we discussed also, in which Hashem promised Abraham a child, also began with the phrase, Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ele, it was after these things. And Rashi there also commented, after what things? Where did this promise of children come from? And it came after Abraham had fought the battle of the 4 and the 5 kings, and he was afraid, he had lost all of his reward. Something had happened that led Abram to be afraid, and therefore there was a response. And here too, this week, this major incident of Hashem commanding Abraham to sacrifice his son is opened with the phrase, and it happened after these things. Now that phrase the sages never miss, and they ask the question of, the what things? What took place that led to this incident? So they say two things, which we'll read in Rashi. As an introduction to it, just to read it inside, is in the bottom of page 94. On page 95, we have the beginning of chapter 21, which is, you'll see in your little header in the art scroll on the left-hand side of your page, is the birth of Isaac. So it was just a few verses before where we're about to read of this command to sacrifice Isaac. We read about the... It's fine for the air conditioner's on. We'll get some air in here. We'll read about the birth of Isaac. And the Torah describes over here the first 8 verses. Hashem remembered Sarah as he had said to them, and she had it conceived. She bore a son to Abraham in his old age. And verse 4, Abraham circumcised his son Isaac at the age of 8 days, according to the commandment that Abraham had been given. Isaac is thereby the first child to be circumcised at 8 days old. Was he the first person who was circumcised?
No.
No. Who was the first person circumcised?
Avram.
Avram, good. Who was the second person circumcised? Yishmael. The son Yishmael. And then it seems like Avram circumcised some of the people in his household, and then you have Isaac. So he was certainly in the top 5, but he was not the first. You have Avram and Yishmael were before him. But Yitzchak does have the ability to say he was the first person circumcised on the appropriate day of the commandment of day 8. That is recorded just a few verses earlier over here. The verse continues, Avram was 100 years old when he was born. Sarah says, what a laughable event, has made a laughter for me. Anyone who hears about this will certainly laugh on my behalf. And then verse 8, which is relevant to us, the child grew and was weaned, and Avraham made a great feast on the day Isaac was weaned. And then the Torah goes on to describe the incident of the expulsion of Hagar, the maidservant, and Yishmael. And that's where we continue. But we have several verses before where we're up to. We're at the beginning of chapter 22. The beginning of chapter 21, we have this incident of both Isaac's birth, his circumcision, and then the feast that Abraham makes when he was weaned, which is an interesting thing. That's relevant, isn't it? Here you have the Torah recording all these events, important events that we need to know about, right? So Yitzchak grew. He was no longer nursing. He was now 3, 2, whatever old, however old he was. And Avram makes a feast that he's now a child that's been weaned. Recorded for all of eternity in the Torah. That he did it is one thing, but that we need to know about that. There's no follow-up. That's just what's there. Okay, that's the precedent. I'm setting you up, obviously, because the sages found the connection between those verses and what we're about to read. Okay, back to our story. So, our section, our chapter dealing with this event, the binding of Isaac, begins with the phrase, Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ele, it was after these things. What things took place that preceded this test of the binding of Isaac? So Rashi says two things from the sages. There were two events which took place. We're going to have to move into a new room, ladies and gentlemen. So look at that.
Sam.
I think the Carsons are going to have to do some construction. We're going to have to expand. This room is not big enough for the amount of Torah being taught in this institution. We'll have to do that. Right now, I think we should be fine. But air turned off. Okay. Jesus sent
him. We're fine now, we got it.
We got it. All right, back to our story. Okay, so again, the verse begins with the Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ele. So the sages have to ask the question, as we have to ask ourselves in studying any text. Apparently, it was important to us to know that this test of the binding of Isaac came after these events. Well, what events took place? So the sages in the Talmud, in Tractate Sanhedrin, have an entire page in which they go through all these verses and have all sorts of fascinating things to say about this. So they say two things over there, which Rashi quotes. Both of them, it's the first Rashi. I'll read it inside for those interested. I'll certainly translate for those who just want to listen in. Says Rashi, Yesh mirabuseinu omrim achar dvorov shel satan. After the words of the Satan, the ministering angel who had negative remarks or was trying to call up bad things about the Jewish people, Shoyim Mekatreg was complaining, Va'oimer, prosecuting, really, is a better word. And he said, Mikol Su'uda Sha'osa Avraham Lo Hikriv Lefanecha Par Echad O Ayil Echad. He just made a big feast. He just weaned his son, made an entire feast. There were no sacrifices offered. It just says, Avraham made a big feast. And Rashi quoted over there, which I didn't mention just before, and he invited all the leaders of the generation to partake. No sacrifices. No offerings of thanks. No anything. Says the Satan before Hashem, here's your son Avraham, right? You promised him a son in his old age. He gave birth to a son. He's 99 years old. He gets this promise. He has a child at 100. Sure, if you think your Avram's so great. He didn't even give you a single sacrifice at the big feast that he made and when he weans his child. Amar lo, Hashem says to the Satan, Klum asal b'shvil b'no. He's only doing this for his child, right? He's making this big feast because now he's got this child and he's so excited. Ilu ha'isi oimer lo zavach oso lefonai. If I were to ask him to sacrifice that child for me, he wouldn't hold himself back. Fascinating insight that the sages say. So where did this test come from? Somehow Avraham didn't offer sacrifices overtly, explicitly, at this feast of the weaning of his child in gratitude and in thanks to Hashem for having given him this child. The prosecuting ministering angel, so to speak, says, what happened to Avraham? He forgot about you. Hashem says, he forgot about me? Are you kidding me? This son, he would do anything for me. He would even sacrifice this son for me if I were to ask. And in that, the sages somehow saw the origin of this idea of the test of such a binding of Isaac at the altar. Fascinating insight. What are the sages telling us? What do they say? Now, whenever you learn Medrash, whenever you learn the Agadita portion of the Talmud, in which they're describing things like this, in terms of events and conversations taking place between ministering angels, sometimes it really happened, sometimes it didn't. That's the difficulty of knowing. Are they just telling us a message? Are they recording history? But what's the matter? What are the sages telling us?
There's no free lunch.
I mean, there's a lesson here. The sages are telling us something. Right? They're saying, here it is. Avram was given something. And somehow, now, why he didn't bring the sacrifices, that I don't know. I don't have an explanation for it. Some possibilities, maybe he thought it wouldn't even have been sufficient. We could talk about why he didn't. But he did it. There was some prosecuting or evidence available to a prosecution against him that said, here you gave him this most wonderful gift, and there was something lacking of his appreciation, that he recognized that it came from you, and he's giving you the appropriate measure of thanks. And what's the response? Well, then he's going to have to let... It's almost like he'll show you that everything is for the son. He would even sacrifice the son for me. He's really so recognized and cognizant of the fact that it was from me, he would even sacrifice it back for me if I asked it. Now, God often doesn't ask that of us. He doesn't ask us when we show a lack of gratitude. You know, we got a new car, we got a new house, we got a new whatever, that if we don't show the appropriate gratitude, so then there's some test which comes up in which we give it back. But there is an idea, there is a lesson, there's a concept there of, I gave this to you, and then there's almost that test, the response of, well, if you're not showing me that you recognize that it came from me, you have this prostituting angel saying he doesn't care about you, so, to which God has to respond and say, no, it's not true. If I ask him for it back, he'll give it back to me. Certainly never want to be put in that position. Certainly never as great a test as Avram faced, but the lesson learned of cutting that off beforehand, when you make that feast, remember to whom you're making that feast, overtly, explicitly, and cutting that off. But it's a fascinating statement that the sages make in that regard. So that's the first thing that they say. That's what brought out this test. Statement number two, Rashi quotes. What, again, was after these things that the test came about. What is this after? So Rashi says it's beginning of the line, four lines. Down V'yeshomrim, Acher Devarav Shal Yishmael. Others from amongst the sages said, you know what this event is coming after? It's coming on the heels of the words of Yishmael. Shoyim Ispa'er Al Yitzchak. He was glorifying himself over Yitzchak, saying to Yitzchak, you had a circumcision. Big deal. You were 8 days old. You didn't know what was going on. You didn't have to acquiesce to it. You didn't participate. You're a little child. Think that's a big deal? You're nothing. Me? How old was I when I had my circumcision? 13 years old. A young man. I could have not been involved. Look at the sacrifice I made for my father Avraham and his God Hashem. Who are you? This Yitzchak, that you know, the blessing is bestowed, the Abrahamic blessing is bestowed upon you, that you're going to inherit dad and all of his spirit. I'm the man, you're nothing. You're an 8-day-old baby. So to that, Hashem says, after these things, that Yishmael was glorifying himself over Yitzchak, Achar ha-devarim ha-el, after those words, translating them, devarim sometimes means things, and sometimes means literally words. After those words of Yishmael, Hashem tests Avraham and says, let's see what Yitzchak's made of also. That you'll see that Yitzchak will even be willing to give up of his entire life. You, Yishmael, alright, so he went through a circumcision at 13. But if I ask Yitzchak, he will be willing to give up everything. And those are the two things that the sages say. What is the meaning of Acher HaDevarim HaEla? After these things, sometimes translated as words, after which words took place that brought about this test? So you have the two comments of the sages, one after the words of the Satan, after the prosecuting angel who said that Abraham fell short in his gratitude to you for his son Isaac. Response to that was, offer Isaac up as a sacrifice. Or the sages say, after the words of Yishmael, who said, I'm so much greater than you, I gave up so much more than you. So Hashem says, no, we'll see. Yitzchak's willing to give up far more than you, Yishmael. He's even willing to give up his entire life. Okay, that's background for our story. Back to the verse, continuing verse number 1. Vayhi achar ha-dvorim ha-eila. So it was after these things, v'ho Elokim niso es Avraham, Hashem tested Avraham and said to him, Avraham, Ayomer Hineini. Hashem says, Avram, and Avram calls back and says, here I am. I am ready. Now, so here you have an introduction which you often don't have. This, out of all of Avram's tests, this is the only one introduced with the phrase, this was a test. The phrase the Torah says, it was after these things, and God tested Avram. The other 10 tests that Avram received, the sages derive from the verses that this incident was a test and that was a test. And here you have the header in which the Torah introduces this and says, Here was a test. And so the commentators all stop here and they talk about this idea. What is the meaning of a test? What is this concept of God testing people? It's a really difficult concept. We're used to it. We grow up with it. We're familiar with the stories. We're familiar with this story particularly, that God tests people. We know that. We are constantly given tests all the time in our lives. And if we're aware of them and we open up our eyes to our daily existence, they're constantly, you know, dealing with these little incidents. What's the purpose of it? What's the problem with the concept of the test? So the problem that's always addressed is Hashem knows everything. He knows whether or not we have the ability to pass the test. He knows whether or not we will pass the test. What is gained? What is the purpose of putting us through this ordeal? And every test is an ordeal. Some are much more difficult for us than others. And we all know from the experiences in life that we have, tests are difficult, painful experiences. He knows what's coming. So why are we going through it? This is a question you've all either heard or been bothered by yourselves. Question of why. So there are two approaches. This is one of those things. I'm not going to say like, oh, this is the answer. There are two approaches from some of the major players. Maimonides and Nachmanides. The Rambam and the Ramban offer an approach. So I want to share with you that, and then we'll see how almost their two approaches are woven into some of this story as well. Maimonides takes the following approach. So certainly the test is not for God's sake. Hashem knows what your dedication to Him is. He knows what you're capable of. He knows what you can do. That's not the necessity of the test. What the test is the fulfillment of the concept of the Jewish people being a chariot to God's name being brought into this world. We are here as God's representatives in this world. If it would not be for the Jewish people, Hashem's name would not be in the world, because we are the carriers, the bearers of that name, and we are there to spread what it means to live an observant lifestyle, observant in the sense of fulfilling the will of our Creator who has made everybody, Jew and non-Jew alike, and this is what He wants from us, and we are the ones who bring that out as the oft-quoted light to the nations of the world sort of idea. The word nisayon, test, is rooted in the word nes, which has a lot of meanings, one of which is a banner. The sun nes is a phrase we say in the Shemone Esrei, to raise a flag or raise a banner. So Maimonides takes the approach that the purpose of a test, the purpose of a nisayon, is to raise the banner of God. To put God up on a flag, raise it up, and carry that to the front lines like they do in the war, in the old Civil War movies, person in front carrying the flag, saying, this is God's army. And when you pass the test, and every test is a trial of man's ability to use his free will to overcome his other inclinations, be it for his own personal selfishness, desires, or needs or wants, and to say, I put all of that aside, and I fulfill the will of God, and you put that up there on the banner, and you put that out there in front of the world to see, Hashem says, I need to test you in order to show the world what the Jewish people is made of, to show the world what a human being can be, and to show the world that I exist, because you, the Jewish people, are doing it for me. So it's a means of getting my name out into the world of what it means for a person to act and behave in a way that he's capable. That's the approach that Maimonides takes as to the meaning and purpose of the test, is to be a banner, so to speak, for God's army, that the Jewish people are able to do so. Now, even with that approach, it's worthwhile pointing out, not every test we go through is a public ordeal. Very many of our tests are very private, interpersonal, within ourselves, how we will react to things, how we behave, where no one else might even know. That's all part of bringing godliness into the world, whether or not people see or don't see. But the approach that Maimonides takes, that the purpose of the test is to be that banner for the nation of God, so to speak, and to bring His name out to what we're able to do. That's Maimonides' approach. Nachmanides, the Ramban, has a different approach. He writes, and this is an idea which we've actually discussed here for a couple of weeks, it's been woven into different areas and themes. He writes the idea that a person is a ball of potential. They are just made up of all sorts of character traits, skills, talents, abilities, all of that, but it's just locked in within a person. And what a test does is a test brings out into reality, brings into fruition all that is capable of being accomplished by a person. And without the test, without the drive, without ever being pushed to know what you can accomplish, then you'll never know that you were actually able to accomplish that. And the Ramban writes, since our goal in life is to do that, is to do and not just to be able to do something, so then that's where he says, that's where you have the fulfillment of the concept of a test. And he brings it, you could describe, Rav Akiva Tatz writes about this, put in a little plug for our big Shabbaton coming up in another month. So he writes about this in one of his books, the concept of bringing things into fruition, is we find this throughout world history. He says, even Hashem himself, he had the ability to create a world and bestow kindness upon creations even before he did it. He didn't only have the ability to do it, he always could have done it, right? But it's not enough to say, oh, I could do that and therefore I don't have to. No one is really satisfied knowing, well, I couldn't do this or I could do that, but why bother? It's when you actually go ahead and you do it that you then have the nachas, the whatever we want to say. I'm not saying that it's Hashem has nachas, but there's a concept in the world of from Hashem himself all the way down to us. I'm not just taking the potential that a person has, but actually being able to put it into practice. And the Ramban writes that that's the concept of Nisayon. So it's not to show Hashem what you can do. It's not to show the world what you can do, according to Nachman. It's to show you what you can do. It's to show yourself and to bring out in yourself all the things which were latent within you and now have come out. And that is always, whenever we're pushed, we do things which I didn't know that I could do that. I didn't think that I was able to do that. And when you're pushed, you find out, oh, I could do that. And we often find ourselves in life saying, wow, I never thought I'd be able to do that. We literally say that to ourselves. I never thought I could do that. I didn't know. And then all of a sudden, the whole life's course is recharted because, hey, I can do it. And that which we would have lived our entire lives in a certain way because we thought we couldn't do something, being in a certain trial or ordeal, difficult time, and working it through shows us, yeah, it's in there, I got it. And then we're able to accomplish so much more because of that, and we've really become different people. We've become people who are aware of our talents and abilities. So it's to show ourselves what we have and what we're capable of doing, how much more we're able to serve Hashem. That's the purpose of the test. Okay, those are two approaches. I'm sure there are others. I'm not taking sides on either one of those, but just sharing two thoughts from our major sages and great rabbis of years gone by, Maimonides and Nachmanides, how they approach this concept of a test. Okay, back to our verses. So we've just one verse so far. We're moving slowly this afternoon. All right, so what's the test? So the test begins in verse 2, Pasuk Beis. Vayoymer, Hashem says to Avram as follows, Kach no es bincha. Please, the word na means please. It's translated here in our scroll. Funny language for a test. So Hashem says to Avram, please do me this favor. Please take your son, es yichidcha, your only son, asher ahavta, the one you love, es yitzchak, Isaac, lech lecha el eretz ha-Moriah, and go to the land of Moriah, which is always a reference to Yerushalayim and the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount, as it's known to us today, where the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, was going to be constructed. V'ha'aleyu sham le'olah, and you will bring him up there as an offering, al achad heharim asher omar elach. And one of the mountains which I will show you, you go up to Yerushalayim, I'll show you which mountain, take your son and raise him up there as a sacrifice. So again, here the sages pick up and Rashi points out this language of na, please. Usually when Hashem commands us to do something, he doesn't say, please put on tefillin in the morning. Please keep Shabbos. Please keep kosher. It doesn't work that way. Hashem says, I'm the creator. You're the created. Here are the rules by which we play. Do this, do that, don't do this, and don't do that. Through that, we will have a loving relationship and things will be good. That's usually the way that it goes. So the sages pick up this word, please, is interesting. Because he's asking a big thing of him. He's asking to take his son, who he's promised him. He's 100 years old, he's been waiting. Now he's 37 years old, his son, as the sages learn. Go sacrifice him. Please, please do me a favor. Just sacrifice your son. So Rashi says, based on the Gemara and the Talmud, what's with the language of please, says Rashi? Eina el aloshen bakashas. In verse Rashi, Pasuk Beis, if you want to read it inside. It's a request. I have a request of you, Avraham. Please do me a favor, make it through this test. Get through it. Stand by it. Do it for me. Shelo yomru harishonos lo hoyo bahen mamish. That they shouldn't say the first ones had nothing to them. They were insignificant. When the sages speak this out in the Gemara, they say a little bit more. They say this is comparable to a king who has a mighty warrior. And the mighty warrior serves them through battle after battle after battle after battle, victorious in all of them. And then the battle of battles approaches, the biggest of all of them. And everybody says, well, let's see now really what this guy's made of. All these other ones that he's won, all right, he's a good fighter, but he's never been up against an army like this. So the king says to him, listen, I know your strength. I know that you are the most magnificent soldier ever. But I need you to go out there and fight this last one for me, because people are going to say that the first ones weren't really a big deal. I know that you can do this one too. Do me a favor. Take this one on also for me, so that nobody will complain about the first ones. So too, say the sages, Hashem said to Avram, I know you can do all this. But in order that the people shouldn't say that there was really nothing there, it wasn't really so hard, do me a favor, do this biggest of all tests. Do this one for me also. So the sages say. Now, going back to our dispute between Nachmanides and Maimonides, the two approaches as to what the purpose of the test, which statement of the sages does this sound more like? The approach of, we are being tested in order to show the world what it means to be a Torah observant religious Jew, or we're there to show ourselves what we're capable of accomplishing?
Capable of accomplishing, I think.
And I would say, why do you say that?
That's because he didn't say, I commanded you. He says, do me a favor.
Okay, so from that perspective, yes. But from the statement of the sages who say, do me a favor, be like the warrior who everybody will say, nah, the first ones were nothing. So to me that sounds like, that's Maimonides' approach, the first approach of, we are being tested to show the world, and the sages say something to along the lines of, listen here, Av, I know that you did a lot for me already, but people are going to say, nah, wasn't so hard. So do me a favor, go out there and take on this last one, so that nobody will say that, everybody will know that the first ones were of substance as well. To me that sounds more, if I had to choose one or the other, sounds more to me like that's the approach of Maimonides, that we are being tested in order to show the world what a person, a human being, is capable of doing. And that's what it sounds from the language of, that it's a request, that it's, do this one last time for me to show everybody what you're made of. And it sounds like to me, I'm not saying it probably can go either way, but that's, to me, that's how it sounds. Okay, one more Rashi in this pasuk. So Rashi is bothered again, he's quoting the sages here, of how many times does Hashem say to Avraham who he's taking? He says, take your son, take your only son, take the son you love, Yitzchak. Let me just tell them straight, take Yitzchak. So Rashi comments, he said, take your son. Avraham says, I have two sons. Hashem says, the one, your only son. So they're both only sons. This is an only son to his mother, Hagar. This is an only son to his mother, Sarah. He says, the one you love. Love them both. He says, oh, Yitzchak. That's the conversation which took place, why the request is made that way. That there was a whole conversation. Take your son. Which son? I have two sons. This son. They both are single individual or only sons. The son you love. Love them both. Yitzchak. Why not straight Yitzchak? So Rashi says, the reason why it wasn't done straight, he didn't just say, take Yitzchak. Lama lo gila lo mitchila, why didn't he just reveal it to him right away whom he wanted to take? Shlo le'arvavo pisayim, in order not to frighten him, to confuse him immediately upon hearing this, the tazuach daitu alo v'tijof, and he would get all confused and no longer mentally stable to make a rational decision. Meaning if all of a sudden, Hashem appears to Avram and says, take Yitzchak and offer him up as an offering. It's too much information too fast. We don't internalize it, we can't integrate it, and you get lost. It's like thinking under pressure. There's nothing worse than thinking under pressure. We freeze. We lose the ability to work it through. Hold on. I get the facts straight. Figure out from the best thing you could do, you know, you're speaking to a car salesman, it's the worst. So they right away, they say, you know, they call you up, you know, you need to decide by the end of the day. Cars are going to be gone, deal's over, sales over, rebates over, whatever. As soon as they do that, the mind just freezes. Just not capable of, and they know that very well. They're very good at that. All the advertisements that do, you know, act soon, hurry now, sale ends, today, and then the advertisement runs tomorrow. Sale ends today. They're just playing on that sense of, I got to get it quickly. And when you get into that mindset, you feel like, I got to make a quick decision, and it's hard for you to think it through clearly. We just get lost, and you make decisions. So Hashem didn't want that from Avram. Didn't want the decision that was going to be made under the pressure of, well, Hashem just asked me to do something, I'm going to do this. This is the big test. And therefore, I'm going to introduce it into you slowly. I'm going to say, I want you to take a son up to Haran. A son, two sons. So I've been engaged in what's going on, but you haven't told me it's Yitzchak yet, because that's going to be the Yitzchak, the son I've been waiting for 100 years. The son who you promised me is going to be the fulfillment of all my dreams, will be as numerous as the stars and the sand of the sea. I didn't say that yet. I said, take the son who's your only son. That could be Yitzchak, but I have two only sons. No, take the son you love. But I love them both. By this time, we're addressing it. We know what's going on. It's Yitzchak. So that when I hear that, I'm ready for it, and I'm going to do it with a settled mind, ready to accept the mission, and not startled into it without being able to do it correctly. This is a great lesson, as I'm sure you've all experienced being on both ends of it. When you have to tell somebody a piece of information that is a harsh, jarring piece of information, so you need to know how to break a person in. Fortunately, there's a loss in the family, or there's whatever's going on, it needs to be, you know, everything is okay. Right when you say that, so the person knows something's wrong. Right? But you haven't told them that whatever's happened. It breaks them in, okay, something's coming. Are you sitting down? Are you ready for this? I have some information to tell you. And it puts the person in a position, I'm ready to hear. There's bad news coming. You need to hear it. You're going to have to deal with it. But you're ready. The mind's working. What could it be? It could be this. And you're mentally getting prepared for it. And then as you say a little bit more information, it's something to do with whoever it has to do with. So it allows us to deal with that. And Hashem didn't want Avram to get into something where he was startled into it. He wanted it to be prepared. I remember I was on a train once, when I was living in Baltimore. I was recently married, probably less than a year. And my grandfather was being honored somewhere in New York. So I got a ride in. I was taking a train. Whatever the story is, taking a train back home to Baltimore. It was a late night train. I think we left Baltimore at 11 o'clock at night. So I left New York to go back to Baltimore at 11 o'clock. At around 1 o'clock in the morning, the train hit something on the tracks. Turns out, I heard in the news the next morning, I think it was a parked car. Somebody had stolen a car. And whatever, something happened. But the train hit the car in the middle of an open field. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Power goes out in the train, and we're just stopped in the middle of who knows where. No one knows what's going on. So this is still, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago. So cell phones were a commodity back then. It wasn't like everybody had a cell phone. So there were like two or three people in the car who had cell phones, and they were being very generous. They were passing it around to everybody who you can make a quick phone call to, whoever was waiting for them in Baltimore, letting them know that they were going to be late. And I will always remember, I imagine, because I like telling this story, there was one, I don't know, late teenage, early 20s, a girl who was on the train who calls up her mother, wakes her up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and says, Ma, we hit something on the train! And I'm like, I can't believe that was the first thing out of her mouth. And then you hear her for 20 minutes saying, no, I'm fine, no, I'm fine, no. And like what did he think? Like, your mother picks up the phone at 1 o'clock in the morning, and we just, like, throw at her, like, we hit something out of her. So then she says, 20 minutes, like, I was waiting for the phone, like, trying to calm her mother down. But there's a way to break people into information. You could have just said, I'm going to be a little bit late. What happened? We're all fine. We just, but that's not so. That lesson was so seared into my mind that when you just drop information, like, they don't know how to handle it, and then you just go crazy. So says Rashi, two things. Number one, the first reason why Hashem did this to Avram, he said, I want you to take your son, take your only son, take the son you love, take Yitzchak, in order not to throw his mind off, because he wanted this to be a test that Avram passed with 100% full mental capacity. I'm doing it, not because I was startled into it, but because this is what I need to do. Then Rashi says a second thing, l'chavei v'lovis ha-mitzvah, in order to endear the mitzvah to him, in the sense of, I'm waiting to hear what it is that I, here's your mission. What is it? Is it this or is it? No, it's not like this. I have two sons. That's on your lot. Which one? In order to build up of knowing that I have a mission to do, a tzivoy, a mitzvah, a commandment, and not knowing what it is, to endear it to me, waiting to find out, I bought you a present. He did. What is it? Is it big or is it small? It's big. Is it in a box? So it's just, I can't wait. You're just building it up. What is it that I need to do? When can I get it? So too, says Rashi, Hashem sort of built up what this commandment was going to be in order to endear it to Avram, so that all mitzvahs need to be done, they need to be done in such a manner. Okay, let's move on, shall we? Verse 3, Pasuk Gimel. Vayashkem Avraham Baboker. Avram woke up early in the morning. Many commentators point out that means he went to sleep that night. Avram receives a command that he's supposed to, the following morning, take his only son Yitzchak, offer him up as a sacrifice. The son Yitzchak, who his promise was going to be as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand in the seas, waited 100 years for, offer him up. And Avram went to sleep that night, because Hashem gave him a command to do, and he was going to do it. And whatever was going to happen was going to happen. But that's what he needed to do. And he woke up early. What did he do in the morning? He saddled his own donkey. So Rashi comments here as well, that normally wasn't done. A person of Avram's stature doesn't saddle the donkey. They had servants who did that kind of stuff. Yet Rashi here makes a statement from the sages, which is quoted often in Chumash and elsewhere. Ha'ahava mekalkeles es hashura. Love distorts appropriate behavior. When you love someone or something, you do things which the casual observer would say, well, that was inappropriate for a person like you, you behave like that. But when there's real ahava, when there's real love, so you know what? You do funny things sometimes. And you don't live by the rules and the standards and you say, well, I'm going to behave like this, I'm going to be like that. You're going to, whatever it means. Whatever it means within a process. A young couple certainly are classic. I mean, there's all sorts of weird things that I never would have thought you would have done something like that. Well, yeah, you know what? That's what happens. And whenever we're into something, we're really into it, we believe in it passionately, we'll find ourselves doing things which we normally wouldn't otherwise do because we believe in it. And it's a great testimony, this statement that the sages make. I'm going to saddle my donkey. What are you doing? I got to go. I don't care. I'm going to do it myself. So that when we believe in something and we love it and we want to be part of it, that sense of, not for me. Oh, somebody else should be doing that. That's a testimony that we haven't really totally bought in. Because when you're there, then you'll do anything. Great example of this, go to any synagogue and find out from the people who are really making the synagogue run, be it the rabbis, be it the executive director, be it anybody on staff, and they're sweeping the floors after the kiddush if it's not going to get done. What are you doing? I mean, this is my shul, and right now it's dirty. When my shul is dirty, I clean it up. Don't you have somebody to do that? I don't know. Well, I'm not going to spend 10 minutes looking for them. I got to do it. Something is wrong. It's not for you. What do you mean? This is my building. This is my house. In our house, we do that, right? Let's say a person has a cleaning lady. But right now, there's a spill, so you wait. This is my house. I'm not taking care of it. You take care of it. You don't worry about those things. So too, says, the love of something just distorts a regular societal norm. I got to do it. I got to do it. So Avram wakes up and I don't care. Now, what else does he do? He takes his two servants, two lads with him, and he splits the wood that he needs, and he goes off, heads off to the place where he's going to go. Now, how long of a journey is it? Anybody know?
3 days
journey. Two comments the Ramban makes. Number one, it was a 3-day journey. So the Ramban comment, that also is a follow-up of what Rashi commented on the fact that Hashem introduced this by saying, take your son, your only son, the son you love, Yitzchak, in order to break him into it. The Ramban furthers that by saying, even after that, it took him 3 days to get to the place he needed to go to. 3 days of having nothing on your mind other than, I am traveling to sacrifice my son to God. Where are you going? I'm going to travel and sacrifice my son to God. 3 days of it. So that by the time he gets there, says the Ramban, there is nobody who's going to claim that Avram was pressured into this, didn't have his mind about him, lost his wits. This was something which he was aware of, got the information in a way which didn't startle him, carried out the information in a way in which he was able to work it through and be sure that this is what he wanted to do and he was going to do it. Gets there 3 days later. Then, says the Ramban, when did he chop the wood? Before his trip or after his trip? Before his trip. Says the Ramban, you got a 3-day trip coming, right? You're going to take your servants, you're going to take Yitzchak, you got stuff to bring with you. You're going to schlep all the firewood for 3 days? Why don't you just chop some wood when you get there? Says the Ramban, Avram wasn't willing to take a chance that there wasn't going to be what he needed. There is no way, said Avram, I'm just going to leave it. I'll take care of it when I get there. No. When you got something, you got a mission to do, and you're going to fulfill such a commandment, I'm not leaving it up to, when I get there, I'll take care of it. Everything is set in advance. Before I go, I have all the tools that I need, I got all the equipment that I need, and if it means schlepping firewood for 3 days, I'm going to schlep firewood for 3 days, but I'm going to set out knowing that I got what I need, and I'm not going to get there and then have to start running around for it, because when I'm there, I have what to do. Fascinating comment. Let me make one more comment on this incident, and then we'll... Let's get through. You can read the story over Shabbos. Let's get through verse 16, Pasuk Tezayin. So the incident takes place. Of course, you know, Avram goes through with it. The angel calls out and stops him. The second angel calls out and says, no, instead of Isaac, offer up this ram instead. Verse 16 and verse 17. Vayomer, we'll just read it in English as we're running out of time. By myself I swear, so Hashem himself takes a vow that because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only one, I shall surely bless you and greatly increase your offspring like the stars of the heavens and the sand on the seashore, and your offspring shall inherit the gate of his enemy. So Hashem takes a vow following this incident that his Abraham's sons will surely increase like the stars, like the sand, will inherit our enemies. What's the problem with his vow?
He already made it before.
That's correct. He made his vow before. We just spoke about this last week. This is the exact same promise that Abraham has given. This is actually the third time he's done this. Because last week when he made him the promise, last week's class in which Abraham was afraid that he had used up all of his reward following the battle of the four kings and the five kings in which he saved his nephew Lot, Shem promises and says, I'm going to make you great, you'll have a son, you'll be like the stars of the heaven. And the Ramban there asked and said, you promised him that in the beginning of the parasha last week. We already had that. The Ramban, we spoke about last week, that here Avram was afraid he might do something which would lose that, he might sin inadvertently, and this is a promise that no matter what he does, the promise will be fulfilled. But now again, then he goes through this trial of the binding of Isaac. Following that, God himself takes an oath, I'm going to make your children as numerous as... We had this already. You want to hear a comment from the Ramban? Says Nachmanides, Hine huftoch, that no sin will ever come to cause our people to be wiped out, no matter what happens, even after it once was fulfilled for sure, that we became as numerous as the stars. This is a promise that no sin will then cause us to lose that status. Vihine zu haftocha shleima, this is the promise, in one phrase that Ramban writes, this is the promise of the final redemption of our people. This promise coming off of the binding of Isaac, in which God swears your people will be as numerous as the stars of the heaven and the sand on the sea, and they will inherit the gates of their enemy. This promise, says the Ramban, is the promise in which we are holding on to all these years. This is the promise of the Geula HaAsidolan, of the final redemption, that we will be as numerous as the stars, as the sand, that we will inherit, in fact, the gates of our enemies. That, says Ramban, is the meaning of this last promise, which is really the third time now that Hashem has promised Avram children in such a manner. This, says Ramban, is a reference to the final redemption. One last comment. This test is known as one of the biggest tests, as we opened up with. The tenth of the ten tests, one of the most difficult. Why was this? It's a silly question. Why was this so difficult? Of course it was difficult. He was asked to take his son Isaac. But when it was asked, when often this question is asked, what's so difficult about it? Avram was a prophet, after all. He was a prophet. He had a communication from the Creator. The Creator communicated with him and said, take your son Isaac and bind him up, make him an offering to me. So certainly we have it's a difficult thing. But we're also missing the element of what it's like to be a prophet and receive prophecy. So when we judge the difficulty, the level, he was a prophet. He did receive the word. That's what he's supposed to do. Then we could talk about this. Maybe next year we'll spend more time on this. I just want to share one thought on this. That Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, who was the great leader of the yeshiva, the Mir yeshiva in Jerusalem for many, many years, he writes that this test had a very interesting element to it. Avram spent his entire life preaching. Preaching monotheism and preaching kindness. That's what he was. Avram was the Ish HaChesed, the man that stood for nothing about other than kindness, the man who spoke out and cried against human sacrifice, against the tortures of the day and age that he had, who had his tents open. You're all welcome. Come in, have something to eat, have something to drink. Thank the God who is giving you this to eat. And now, 137 years later, Hashem says, take your son and sacrifice him. Read, take your entire life and flush it down the toilet. Take your entire life, everything that you stood for, every element of kindness, of giving to others, of preaching against human sacrifice. Take it all and just forget it. Your whole life is meaningless, because you know what the world's going to say to you? You know what the world's going to say the headlines of the newspaper are going to be? Avram Avinu, in the name of God, sacrifices his son. All those people you've been dealing with for all of these years, all the people you've been introducing to the Creator, do you think they're going to stick around after the God whom you've been preaching about commanded you to sacrifice your only son? What is this? That's the test. This is what I ask you to do. You understand it, you don't understand it, you get it, you don't get it, it makes sense, it doesn't make sense. How is this possibly going to make sense? This is my whole life's work. This is everything. My life's work is your life work. I'm teaching people about you, about kindness, about giving, about chesed. You promised me that from this son I'm going to have children like the stars, like the sand of the sea. You're telling me to sacrifice him? You're telling me my whole life, just throw it away? How is it possible that that's what you could be asking me to do? It's not feasible. Not feasible. That's what he wanted. That's what he wanted. And to do that, take your life's work, and in the name of the same Creator for whom you've dedicated your life, flip it on its head, flush it down the toilet. Everything is meaningless after this. How could I be Makari people? How could I stand up there and preach to the world the concept of a singular God who's all about kindness and giving and sacrificing your sons? That's not going to work very well. And yet, to go through that, being aware of what you're doing, the three-day journey, the way the message was conveyed to Avram, so that he was clear, with a clear mind on what was going on, that's an enormous task to be able to do that. There's much more to speak about. This is one of such an event in our history as a Jewish people. It stands, and this was done on Rosh Hashanah, of course. This is the Torah reading of Rosh Hashanah. Because of that, so much is as the Ramban we just read. This is the swear of the promise of the final redemption is buried within this incident. There's just so much that we stand upon. The shofar, of course, comes from this incident as well. The ram that was taken in Isaac's stead. So much. It's rich. We just, you know, scratching the surface. What we do? 3 psukim only. Within this, and maybe when next year, Mirza Hashem will continue on. But in any case, that's for this week. That's some thoughts. Some thoughts on the binding of Isaac. Have a wonderful week. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Rabbi.